Hello and welcome to the Women in Action Sports Network Conversation Space. As you know, this is a special one as it's the live recording of the LAX Open Women in Action Sports panel together with Sina Kandrian and Donna Carpenter. Unfortunately, we were only able to record the first part of the conversation where the three of us were talking about the achievements of women in snowboarding as well as the challenges we're still facing in the industry. Panel and after the event, I'm still overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed by the amount of people that showed up, about the amount of men that were there listening and asking and really interested in knowing how we all feel in the industry and what can be done to make it better, more inclusive, more equal. So all I can say right now is thank you for caring, thank you for being here, and thank you for listening. So without delaying it any further, here you have the recording of the conversation we had together with Sina Kandrian and Donna Carpenter. I hope you enjoy it.
We live in a world right now that is a bit upside down, and the first thing I want to do today is acknowledge the privilege we all have to be here. We get to snowboard, we get to be in LAX in Switzerland, in one of the best countries, one of the best resorts for our passion and our sport. And what we're doing is all great and everything, but if we put it into perspective, I think it's very important that we acknowledge this privilege. And the next thing I want to say is how thankful I am for all of you to be here, so many men to be here, and do this as a community, have this conversation for the progression of women's snowboarding and the equal industry, and to be able to do it as a community. I think this is, I can not be more thankful.
It doesn't get better.
It doesn't get better. So thank you all for being here. And of course, well, I am Alba Pardo, I'll be your host tonight, and I couldn't be more excited to introduce you our two guests today. We have Sina Kandrian, LAX ambassador, 2 times Olympian, 3 Olympic diplomas, X Games medalist. She currently works at a foundation helping youth through action sports. And she's just been an icon of Swiss snowboarding for so long.
Legend!
Thank you.
Yes, Sina!
And well done. I think you've been one of my personal influences. Like, I've met you many years ago.
A long time ago.
Yeah. And I mean, what to say about you? You've been the driving force of Burton from, you know, dipping boards in all the chemicals to starting customer service. Her goal, your mission has been to create a brand for purpose and make sure that Burton, the brand, is a brand of choice for female riders and female employees. And that's just groundbreaking. Since the start, you created the European business for Burton and then became president, then CEO, becoming the first female CEO of the company. Now you step back, well, you're in a chair of the company now.
I get to think long term.
Yeah, you get to push that purpose for the brand, and I think that's such an important part of business right now. And of course, if you haven't heard yet, which I'm sure you have, she's dedicating her time to the Chill Foundation, helping inclusivity and young people to come into the sports as well. So please give her a warm welcome. We have a packed agenda today. We have a few topics that we're going to go through, but I see so many friendly faces, so many legends here, so many people that I looked up for so many years, that I want to make sure that we have some time at the end for questions and a bit of interactivity, because I think that's where the good stuff happens. But I don't know if you know, but 2024 marks 20 years in LAX of open competition. Like, it started in BO, then it became LAX Open, but it's been 20 years since that happened in 2005. Sina, you won the first contest that happened here, the junior category, when you were just 16. And it's important to know that before the BO came here in LAX, women weren't even allowed, there wasn't a slopestyle category, they weren't even allowed to compete in in slopestyle. In fact, they were told, some of them, that it was too dangerous for them and that they could ride the fight. But when it came here to LAX, slopestyle happened, and it happened with equal prize money from the very beginning. So I think that's really, really a big step. So Donna, could you please tell us a bit about that transition to coming to LAX and, you know, having from day one that equal prize money and making sure women could compete in the same conditions as...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something this whole community should be really proud of, the way that women have always, from the beginning, earned equal prize money. In our company, it's equal salaries. On the same course. They're riding the same course as men. So I think that as a community, we should be really proud of our heritage there. A lot of sports had to play catch up. And you look at, like, U.S. soccer went through this whole thing where, you know, women demanding more pay. So I think, I think that came from Jake and I. It was always really important that women felt part of the community and were valued as much. I think there came a time when we had to be more proactive there, but I think the idea from the beginning was to have the same course, equal prize money, equal salary.
How did that impact the scene back then, your team riders?
I think we got talent, right? I mean, I was telling you the story of Julia Marino, who's a slopestyle athlete, and she could have competed probably in soccer as a superstar, as well as snowboarding. And her father said to her, you know, female soccer players are paid 30% of what the men are paid. And in snowboarding, women get the same prize money, they get the same salaries. And her father was like, I would go for snowboarding if I were you. And so I think it helps with talent and people realizing that they, are going to get the same treatment.
I mean, Sina, that win in 2005 when you were just 16, kickstarted your career as a professional snowboarder. How has it been, that experience for you, to have that path laid out for you?
Yeah, to be honest, I was just learned how to freestyle snowboard because, first of all, I was alpine racing and then into border cross, and then I really liked the pipe up here and came into this event like with no clue what's going on. I didn't even know it's like the first European LAX Open. And then it all started. I got a contract with Burton, and like the world of snowboarding was open to me, and I could just travel around with snowboarding. A dream came true.
And now the new younger generations here from the area look up to you. So that's an amazing thing. And I mean, it's all great. You know, we've talked about prize money and how all these levels laid out for women so they could compete in the same category, but there's still challenges, and we see it today here in this event, for instance, where participation is definitely one of the biggest issues at elite level, because if we look at the SIA numbers that they release, the participation in snowboarding for women and men are quite 50-50. How is that reflected to the sales and the equipment and everything within the company? Like, do you see that 50-50?
No, not yet. And when we get to 51% participation, 51% sales, I'm retiring. So everybody knows if they want to get rid of me, we got to get those numbers up. It really varies by region and by country. And it was always so interesting to me because for a long time, female participation rate, the number of females we had in our company were similar. You know, it reflects internal, reflects external, right? So I think that as companies push to get more women you know, hopefully that'll spur participation. Hopefully as female participation is spurred, you've got more women who want to make a career in the industry. So I think the two really affect each other.
There was a recent publication, a book called Women in Snowboarding by Dr. C. Stewart, a Norwegian doctor. And she was explaining an interesting concept where the default is male. So everything that we have is kind of designed and created for the male sizes, for the male needs, for the male body. And then when it came to snowboarding and applying that concept to snowboarding, the question that comes up is the course design, the features design. You know, it's really like that default is the male rider. So I wanted to ask you, Sina, and this is a tricky question because I've asked some of the riders here and they all have different opinions, but, you know, back in the day when it first started with the slopestyle, to be more exact, we had the two jumps, the two courses, the bigger, the smaller. There were people that were saying, nobody wants to jump the small jumps. There's always going to be the big one. So what's your thought around that?
It's quite, maybe to say it easy, if you have a bigger jump, it's easier also to do a 360 on a bigger jump because you have more time to make it super easy. But I think
it's like the bigger the better.
No, you just have more time. No, but to be honest, I mean, we train on the same jumps as the guys. We have the same jump sizes as the guys, and I think we also like to have the same jumps as the guys. And I think it's also pretty nice to have the same courses as the boys. So we don't do the same tricks as they do, like technically. We do it maybe a little bit stylisher. I don't know. And I think it's always nice to see that the women and the men, they train together, we push each other together to a big, better level. So it's nice to have the same courses, I'd say.
It's interesting because the research and the numbers actually show, and we were having this conversation earlier today, that there is more injury and elite level of snowboarding on women than there is on men, and injuries that last longer, like longer recovery time injuries. And so it's an interesting point that, you know, when you ask the riders, they're like, oh no, but we want to be on the same course. So do you think the design, and I mean it's evolved a lot, but do you think that design could help the progression further in the sense of, you know, if you have a setup more adapted to you, would you be able to then push it even further?
Yeah, of course, but it's not about the setup maybe, it's more about like the conditions and like the weather sometimes is really challenging during competitions or yeah, during training. But I think it's also very important, like up here in Lax, I think it's really cool. We have like this super small beginner park, then we have the medium park, and then you can do and go to the pro line. So you have like step by step, and that's I think really cool for the kids growing up, like for girls or boys. Doesn't matter, just to have like different kind of sizes and you can do like step by step, level by level.
Yeah, the progression, absolutely. I mean, if you ask anybody in the room, they would tell you that right now the most exciting thing that's happening in snowboarding, and it has for a few years now, is female snowboarding because of the progression of it. And I want to move it forward a bit and go not only on the sports side of things, but on the industry. It's changed a lot. There were very few women working in the industry, and this is changing. And your company is definitely one of the ones that has a higher quota. But it's also true that most of the quotas, or most of the women now working in the action sports industry or the snowboarding industry, are in production jobs. And it's shown, like, we need women in the decision-making positions that they can do change.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole key, is that to do anything, you've got to have a diversity of opinion, you've got to have a diversity of background sitting around making the decisions. And we've seen companies who've really screwed up with the women's market, and, you know, because they didn't have women around the table. But, you know, this is something we started in 2002. Jake and I were sitting in a meeting of all of our global directors from around the world, and there were two women in the room out of 25. And it was actually Jacob turned to me and said, this does not bode well for the long-term health of our company. And it didn't start like that. You know, when we started, it was very equal. Our head of marketing, our head of product was a woman, you know. And then as we grew, we were pulling from surf, skates, and skiing, which is very male-dominated. And at one point, we would take anybody with a pulse off the street, like, come work for us. We weren't very intentional about it, you know, so we had to go back and really, you know, we put our heads down and worked for more than a decade. And, you know, we did mentoring programs. We redid our maternity policies. We did advancement opportunities for women. We were incredibly proactive. And at the same time, we said, you know, we shouldn't have all men sitting around a table making decisions for women's product. So we really divided the women's creative and the men's creative to say that, you know, you want men and women working on both, but you really want women to be able to make decisions about women's product. So we went from under 10% of our leadership being women to over 40%. And the senior team is 50-50, and we have women in non-traditional roles. I always say our head of HR is a dude, mm-hmm. and our, you know, chief business officer is a woman. You know, our head of strategy is a woman. So we sort of turned that upside down. And I, you know, and again, I think the advantage is like women come to us now and say, hey, I know this is a great company to work for.
It's really sad because I still feel like it's one of the exceptions. What do you think? It's happening, and why do you think the others are so slow in catching up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes someone from the top to drive it, right? Like, even though there was people not too happy maybe with it in the beginning, they're not going to give me shit. Right? I can just go ahead and do it because it's coming from the top. You know, I have an interesting story. There was a young woman who called me from a bicycle company, and she said, you know, we want to get this like women's leadership going. And I said, do you have somebody at the top supporting you? And she said, no. And I said, well, then it's going to be really difficult. And about a week later, they put out some marketing thing that was really offensive to women. And there was a complete backlash. And she was able to go to leadership then and said, you know what? If there had been a woman there looking at this stuff, she wouldn't have let it out of, you know, the marketing material out of the building. You need women. So that's when they got behind it or whatever. So I think it's got to be driven, you know, there's got to be an incredible commitment to it and to figuring it out and to making it happen. And it takes time.
I've been around and asked a bit of the younger employees at your company, a bit of the younger scene here. I was like, what do you want to ask Donna? And what do you admire? You know, like, what is it that could be... That empowers you or that makes you want to think. And a lot of them said, like, okay, she had this strength to do, like, I'm here, I'm doing this decision, and I'm standing up for it. But they kind of want to know, how do you get there? How do you get that self-respect or self-encouragement to do so?
Well, I always say women are underconfident and men are overconfident, right? If you have a job... And two people are qualified, the woman will give you, and I've done this in my own career. You know, Jake pushed me to every next level, and I would say, I'm not ready for that job. And so women will give you five reasons why they're not ready, and men will tell you five reasons why they should have had that job yesterday. And so I think there is definitely an underconfidence issue that women have to recognize in themselves. So we did both, you change the company's policies, right? But you also have to change women's attitudes. towards speaking up for themselves and advocating for themselves and asking for development opportunities.
Sina, have you ever had a mentor?
Yes, woman and man, both kind of mentors. And I think this is really important to look up, or like even if you have idols, if they're both, you can pick up the best thing and then put it together and try to follow those paths.
What would you tell, you know, the new ones that are coming, and how? Because sometimes it's like really hard to find that person that's going to guide you through and help you through.
Although, don't you think snowboarding is unique and that there's real friendships happening among competitors?
Yes, of course. Like, I think we're, it's like so sweet to tell, like, oh, we're a big family in snowboarding. But I really think we are, like, even now sitting here and seeing so many people I haven't seen in a couple of years. It's so nice to see, and it feels like comfortable to sit here. I'm kind of nervous, but it's so nice to be here. And that's why also I think it's nice to have like this family with which supports you, and doesn't matter the gender. And with Swiss snowboard, we did like this girls camp like a couple of years ago. Like Ursina Haller started it, like, I don't know, 25 years ago already, kind of a long time ago. Anyways, I haven't been counting. And I think it's really cool that the girls only have like this camp. It's like about 35 girls that came each year snowboarding for 3 days. And that helped to get them like more confident, to shred with themselves, to know each other. But on the other side, I think it's also really cool that they go snowboarding with the boys. So I think as a girl, it's really important to have like girl gang, and also like the boys, which kind of, oh no, I know the speed, just follow me. That's also cool to have, and you need both.
Yeah, and I think that carries further than just within the sport and within snowboarding, but also within a in a business environment. And we're just saying that.
Yeah, and
men.
The problem is, I mean, we live in an ecosystem, right? So even if Burton's doing the right things, like if there are no female instructors, or if there are no females working in a snowboard shop, it's going to be a barrier to women. So we have this ecosystem that we have to work on. You know, more female instructors, more females in, you know, management at ski areas. And, you know, so it's, and in retail. So it's a whole ecosystem in terms of getting women to participate, right?
And I think really important is also to have, like, women coaches. Yes. That's really important.
Exactly.
Like,
we've got to do more to proactively get more female coaches. It's not going to just happen.
We were having this conversation yesterday, and it was like, oh, why isn't there, these years, the first time there's two female judges in the panel out of 15, I think, there is this year. So, I mean, it is improvement. Last year there was one, the year before there was none, so it
but
is improvement.
I think that's something that we can really all focus on is our ecosystem, and more female coaches, more instructors, more judges.
But
more,
the problem is,
more women running companies.
Yeah, but, you know, they are desperately looking for more women to join, and yet nobody wants to. Or that's what they say. What do
that's
you think about
that? I say that's what they say.
Do you think there needs to be a bit more of a clear path?
I mean, come on. If you said, okay, we want you to join a panel of 15 judges and there's one woman, but how are you going to feel?
Intimidated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've got to, what we found and what I think is very true is you've got to get to 30%. Whatever the, you know, if it's a senior management team, if it's a, you know, whatever, you've got to get to 30% of women before they feel comfortable really sharing their perspective and not just going along with the guys.
Maybe it's a bit rude to say this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Yes.
I feel like there's a lot of dinosaurs in the industry. And by dinosaurs, it means normally men, but men that aren't really making space, and that they're defending
so dearly and so strongly what it used to be, that it really makes it hard to do this change. How do we even break through that? Especially in the era of social media too, because it's very challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are breaking through. I mean, I think that, you know, having more women in positions of power, that's what's going to do it. And I even think about when you were talking about the course, like, are there women deciding what the course looks like? You know, like, how is that even done, right? So I think deciding what tables we want to sit at, you know, and then make sure we're really sitting at the table. We're not just sitting in the back observing, but we're really sitting at the table and deciding which ones are the most important. But I was thinking of that in terms of the course, like who decides what the course looks like, and are there women involved in that?
There's two female shapers and a female cut driver right now here in Lux.
Give it up for Lux.
Which kind of brings me to the next point, which we were also kind of mentioning, and it's very obvious here today because there's so many men, and you're all allies, and this is so exciting, I get goosebumps. Could you give us a bit of your view on allies and how men can help us break through?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what happened at Burton was when we put in, you know, when we kind of said, hey, we're going to be increasing the number of women and the number of women's leadership, there was kind of like, you know, uncertainty about how they felt about it. But what happened was, you know, all of a sudden they realized they're getting child care subsidies, they're getting paternity leave, they're getting a
Unfortunately, this is as far as our recording goes and as far as we're able to share today, but this was definitely a conversation to be part of. It's not done, it's not finished, it doesn't end here, this is just the beginning. So reach out, ask questions, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you for being here.